Chapter 12. Ariane walked into the finely appointed drawing room in Belshire Palace, fit to burst. What game was the clerk playing at? She suspected he might be one of Philippa's agents or spies, but from what she understood of his odd history with the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company, she couldn't trust that assumption. And what man, spy or no, would simply hand over, demand that someone else take credit for an act so skillful and heroic that it would at the very least garner him a knighthood? No man she ever knew. At the worst, Queen Philippa was ignorant of who this clerk was and what he was capable of. She had to enlighten her at once. The Cretesian ambassador's accusations and blustery rhetoric signalled dangerous times, and she wouldn't let some disingenuous commoner threaten her friend any further. The truth must out. Once the doors closed and Philippa's serene smile dawned upon her, Ariane tried to settle herself. Her emotions had the better of her, and the older woman's placidity reminded her to keep control. For someone recently the target of an assassination attempt, Philippa appeared remarkably calm.
"Good morning, dear Ariane. Do sit down," Philippa said, setting aside her embroidery. "Did you sleep well after yesterday's excitement?"
"Quite well, thank you,"
Ariane lied as Philippa massaged her knuckles.
"My hands hurt when I embroider for too long," the Queen complained. "I suppose when I can no longer embroider, it will really be time for me to move on. Well, I don't need my gift to tell me that you've got something troubling on your mind."
Ariane sat and took the teacup proffered by a white-wigged servant.
"I do. Can we speak in private? It is a delicate matter, I fear."
"Of course, my dear," Philippa said,
ordering the servants and the guard out of the room with a look.
"I assume this has to do with yesterday's events."
"Yes,"
Ariane confirmed, sipping the bitter tea while she collected her thoughts and waited for the doors to completely shut.
"The first part is about the heroic shooting attributed to the Earl of Longford."
"Ah, the Earl. Yes, a fine piece of marksmanship. Has he asked you to marry him yet?"
The question was asked politely, without mirth, though the Queen wore an expression that Ariane couldn't read.
"It seems the Earl is fond of you."
Ariane looked away from her gaze.
"No, he has not."
The assassination attempt, while unfortunate, had blessed her with the gift of delay on that issue.
"But that is not the point. The point is that the Earl did not kill the would-be assassins."
"Oh, really?"
the Queen replied, leaning forward, eyes alight.
"I thought he seemed a bit dismissive of the whole affair, rather than revelling in his notoriety, as is more in his character. So who did?"
Ariane told her story, the Queen's lips sliding into a grin.
"And so,"
Ariane continued, a little confused by the Queen's odd, even pleased, reaction,
"this clerk forced Earl Longford to accept the credit of it. He literally forced it upon him. It was quite strange, and I thought you should know. I am a bit disappointed that the Earl seems to have so easily accepted the honour and continues with this charade. I think he almost believes he did it."
The Queen's eyes lit up with a mischievous humour.
"Thank you for telling me, dear. Very interesting indeed."
Ariane took a drink before proceeding, wondering what Philippa would do about the Earl's wrongfully assumed fame.
"And that brings me to the second point. I am well aware that this may sound a bit ridiculous. This too concerns the underclerk, Mr. Harper. I fear that he may not be who he says he is, and is serving you under a false pretense."
Philippa surprised her with a wide-eyed look and a hearty laugh.
"Well, I thought you would have figured that out by now. You really don't recognize him?"
"Do I know this Mr. Harper?"
Ariane asked, mind rifling through every face she could remember and trying to match them to the man she saw sprinting through the woods the day before. She was sure she hadn't known him until yesterday. The Queen took a sip of tea before continuing.
"Know him? Well, let me say that you know of him, certainly. Of all people, I thought you would see through his little disguise. I suppose he is cleverer than I thought, or perhaps my discernment aids me in this case."
Ariane's curiosity would not be denied.
"Who is he, then?"
"I will tell you if you give me your word, and I mean your word as a friend, that what I say to you now stays between the two of us. Do I have it?"
"Always."
Philippa smiled again and took another drag on her teacup. Ariane wondered if she savoured making her wait. Philippa played games with people to amuse herself, and Ariane didn't take well to being toyed with.
Very well. Let me give you a clue so I can watch your mouth drop to the floor. I will tell you that to this man you owe your status as an independent woman of large fortune. Does that help any, dear?
Ariane's brow creased as she puzzled, and as the truth slowly dawned in her mind, her heart banged in her chest. Hastily, she set her teacup down, the cup clinking a nervous pattern on the saucer. Could it be? She'd only seen him once, at the Queen's ball, eyes full of fire and passion, as he rebuked her husband and challenged him to a duel of honour for insulting his betrothed. How had she missed it? The brown, weathered complexion, the deep eyes, the athletic form. The clerk displayed them all and cleverly disguised them with a hat, beard, spectacles, and a practiced stoop that he had conveniently thrown off in the heat of the moment.
Yes, you see it now, the Queen said. This is the man who blew a hole in your husband's heart from 30 paces because he called his fiancée Miss Ironwhore in a room full of young drunken lords. I suppose if you couldn't pick him out, no one will. I thought his face would have been branded on your memory forever.
Ariane realized that her mouth had indeed wandered southward and snapped it up.
But Baron Davon Carver? Did I not read that he was dead? Killed in the wild somewhere? Yes, you did.
Ariane's mind reeled. How should she feel? Her husband had been an insufferable bore who could at times behave in an affable and even lovable manner. They had married as an alliance, not for love, and at his passing she had felt little sorrow. At the time she had viewed Lord Carver's violent challenge as high-handed and thought of him with contempt. With a few hours and a strong tea she could have persuaded her reckless husband to apologise, and no blood would have been spilt on the green grass in the courtyard on that beautiful summer's morning 4 years ago. She, of course, had not attended the duel, but waited anxiously for word from their house in town. The messenger's grave countenance told her all she needed to know before she had handed over the legal document stating the results of the contest. She had shed tears, but they did not fall for long or deeply. Looking back, she really had thought little about Lord Davon Carver after the event. He was so unconnected with her and with Belshire nobility in general that he seemed like an odd force of nature, a rumbling, swift storm that had blown into her life and then just as quickly blown out again to some distant country.
But why is he masquerading about? She managed, not bothering to hide her discomfiture. Did I not also hear that widow Lady Carver is to be presented at court as the fiancée of the Earl of Tabor?
Philippa hauled her old bones out of the couch and walked to the window, staring at the manicured gardens where men clipped and snipped at snaking branches and vines to keep them in line.
Well, I have not let him know that I know who he is, so he has not confided anything about his reasons to me. What I offer you now is a bit of conjecture, so take it as such. It's been some 4 years now since he came to court to present his future bride to me. This is what I saw then. I saw a man passionately in love with a woman. I saw a woman opportunistically using a man to escape her reputation.
Ariane calmed herself enough to retrieve her tea.
So her indiscretions were not merely the stuff of idle tales? I'm afraid not,
Philippa returned flatly.
I won't embarrass you with the details, but yes, Miss Ironwhore, while cruel, was not far from the mark.
Ariane was confused.
So why did he consent to marry her then? He didn't know. Part of the reason his disguise works so well now is that he's steered clear of court, mostly due to his family's history, of which you are likely aware, in part. Even when here, he wasn't here in the strictest sense. He isn't one for gossip, politics, and courtly intrigue.
A sensible man, then?
Yes. Though sense failed him when he saw those green eyes, that copper hair, and that thin waist. Your Lord Hightower's slight on his fiancée's character was likely the first bit of really substantial gossip he had ever heard about Emile, to unfortunate effect. At any rate, my dear, to the point. He brought her to Belshire last year, at her behest, I'm sure, and I have never seen an unhappier man in all my life.
I watched him wander around like a phantom at one of the assemblies. It tried to cling to his pride, but he was clearly subdued and humiliated. She was radiant. He was drowning. My opinion is that he faked his own death to escape his marriage.
The coward, Ariane said. He could have divorced her. I suppose he couldn't take the shame of it.
Philippa turned back toward her, gaze sharp, almost angry. Ariane bit her tongue as the queen closed on her, standing a few paces away, arms folded and eyes intense.
Cowardice? Shame? Oh dear, Ariane, sometimes I think I give you too much credit. I suppose it would be hard for you to have a clear mind in this case. Listen for a bit, will you?
Ariane breathed again as Philippa turned her fervent gaze away and paced the room.
When Davin Carver was 14 years old, his mother learned that her husband had squandered away their entire fortune on ridiculous gold speculation. She took ill and died 6 months later, soon to be followed by Lord Carver blowing his own brains out in a melancholic fugue while Davin watched.
Ariane gasped at this blunt revelation. The deaths she had heard of, but not the particulars.
So, at 14, 3 years from his majority, young Davin inherits an indebted, bankrupt estate. Most boys that age would simply fall apart. Not Davin. He fired all his servants and cooked, cleaned, gardened, and managed his family's estate for 4 years, utterly alone, until he had paid back all of his father's debts. He has since turned Frostborn into one of the most prosperous estates of its size in the kingdom. Believe me, dear, when I tell you that I had my people keep an eye on Frostborn for a long while, and what Davin accomplished there was nothing short of astounding. He is a brilliant man.
The queen paused, and Ariane tried to take it in, but the queen ploughed on before she could sort out her feelings.
So enter young Emile Ironhorn of questionable reputation to everyone except the isolated Baron Davin Carver, now with a prosperous estate. She is beautiful, she is accomplished, and it appears she was a charming actress. As I said, he loved her, and she didn't care for him a whit. This he came to know soon after they were married. So, Ariane, to understand the rest, let me ask you a question. Did you love your husband?
Ariane knew lying would be of no use.
I did not.
And did he know it?
Yes.
And was he miserable?
No.
So let's reason it out. Davin Carver was miserable when he came to court last year. What does that tell you about him?
He loved her.
But how could he? He knew by then what she was.
Tsk, tsk, dear. Why is not the issue? That you should even ask such a thing shows me your heart has never been touched. Listen. This same miserable man who had every right and every reason to divorce his wife instead chooses to fake his death and forsake his title, his lands, and the prosperous estate he'd resurrected from nothing. He left it all to her, mind you, to work as a common clerk in a rat-infested warehouse. So, dearest Ariane, I believe that leaves us with two choices as to the nature of Mr. David Harper's character, neither of which is a shameful coward. He is either a madman or
the most generous man in the world.
Exactly, the Queen replied, though at the moment I think it might be a little of both. A bad marriage can do wretched things to a mind.
Silence fell between them as the Queen returned to her window. Ariane abandoned the now cold tea for good. It made no sense. How could he love a woman who had spitefully used him to rescue her from her indiscretions? He'd won her honour back for her, legitimised it by marrying her, gifted her a life of prosperity, his hard-fought prosperity, and then disappeared so she could enjoy it. Unfathomable. Absolutely ridiculous. He had to be out of his wits.
So what are you going to do?
Ariane asked, while wondering the same thing for herself.
If someone else recognizes him, it could turn ill for you and the widow Carver,
whom Ariane was now disposed to hate.
Perhaps. The truth is, I have plans for him. He has already been of much more use to the kingdom as a clerk than he ever was as a lord with all his in absentia voting. I doubt he stepped foot in the Parliament House once. Ironically, he spent more time at court in the last few weeks than he did his entire life before. As for his identity, Widow Carver is really the only one I worry about, though I'd wager she is so happy to be rid of him that she wouldn't say a word even if she did suspect he was still alive.
I hope to never see her, Ariane stated firmly. Philippa laughed.
And what about him? Do you think you can abide his presence?
Honestly, I don't know what to think. The whole business is so singular. It will take time for me to sort it out. Whatever her own feelings, it was clear that the Queen of Belshire had no objections at all with Lord Carver's actions, and even admired them. Philippa nodded in a motherly, understanding fashion at Ariane's perplexity and sat next to her on the couch, patting her hand. Well, sort them out you must. I hope you don't take offence at what I ask of you. I need Lord Carver, well, the clerk David Harper, to go to your estate in Hightower and have a look at your husband's ledgers. The late Lord Hightower was one of the principals behind this little aid society we've all so generously contributed to for the last few years, and I would like to settle my mind about your husband's involvement. I'll need you to be there to handle your steward and clerk. Perhaps send them away for a holiday. Ariane was a little surprised, but the more she thought about it, the more the Queen's inquiry made sense. Why Mr. Harper? It would be hard to address him properly now. Philippa smiled. I need him gone before his soon-to-be-engaged wife comes to court next week. And as an underclerk and someone not well known, his absence from Belshire won't attract too much undue attention. As you wish. When should I leave? They both stood, their meeting coming to a close. In a couple of days. I'll send Mr. Harper to your door a few days after that, when Widow Carver is set to arrive. And please remember the discretion you swore to. Ariane curtsied. I will. I'll see you at the ball tonight, Ariane. Good day. Ariane left, mind spinning. While she didn't feel justified in judging Lord Carver, she resolved it would be best to simply avoid him as much as possible, to spare them both the awkwardness that would result if they were to meet more than absolutely necessary.